Ananda was the Buddha's younger first cousin and a lifelong follower of the Buddha. I was glad to be assigned Ananda, first of all, because I think he's a unique historical figure. I think he also is very relatable to us in modern day times. And lastly, he's got an easy name to pronounce. First, I'd like to set some context. During the Buddha's lifetime, what we now call the Axial Age, there were a lot of people seeking enlightenment. And one of those people that were seeking enlightenment was Shariputra, who we chanted about in the Heart Sutra earlier in practice. Shariputra noticed one of the Buddha's followers in the marketplace one time, and he was begging. But Shariputra noticed that he was very relaxed and serene, and that so struck Shariputra that he asked the teacher, the beggar, for a teaching. And the beggar replied, "From interdependent origins, all things arise and all things pass away. So teaches the perfectly enlightened one." With this, Shariputra's heart just opened up as if it were flooded with a bright light. And he immediately became one of the Buddha's followers. Supposedly, within 2 weeks of being ordained, he reached full enlightenment. So he was on a fast track there. We've heard plenty of stories over the years of sudden enlightenment, many of them during the Buddha's time. And it's within this exciting period of awakenings that Ananda first started practice. Several things distinguished Ananda. First of all, he had an amazing memory for the Buddha's teachings. Supposedly, he could remember all of the Buddha's teachings verbatim, regardless of how long ago they were taught. This came in handy. One night, the Buddha was teaching long into the night and had to stop because his back was sore. So he asked Ananda to take over. Ananda finished his talk, and the Buddha praised him for his excellent recall in that teaching. Second, Ananda was completely devoted to the Buddha. He cooked for him. He mended and cleaned his robes. He massaged him when he was sore. You name it, Ananda did it. Third, despite his memory and his devotion, he never attained full enlightenment during the Buddha's lifetime. I wonder if it's, you know, his amazing memory got in the way. You know, you can have complete recall of all the teachings, but that doesn't necessarily translate into a deep understanding of those teachings. It helped the other monks, though, because sometimes the Buddha would teach in vague and ambiguous ways on purpose to force the monks to, you know, really work at understanding his teaching. And if the monks got confused, they could always go to Ananda and get a perfect recitation of the talk to help them, you know, clarify that teaching. I think that had to be a little frustrating for Ananda, in a sense that he was helping the other monks attain enlightenment, yet he couldn't attain it himself. We have a koan, which is a little story that, how to describe it. You're presented with a koan and then you're asked to respond, and it's a teaching vehicle. We have a koan that illustrates Ananda's dilemma, and it goes like this. Ananda asked Mahakashyapa, "Buddha transmitted to you the golden brocade robe. What else did he transmit to you?" Mahakashyapa called out, "Ananda." "Yes, sir." "Knock down the flagpole in front of the gate." I'm not sure that really helped Ananda with his understanding, but this gets at the heart of Ananda's issue. He just couldn't grasp what had happened when the Buddha held up a flower and transmitted the Dharma to Mahakashyapa. So during the first 20 years of the Buddha's teachings, the Sangha grew tremendously. And like any Sangha, people had various reasons for being there. You know, there were the devoted students, you know, high-level monks that were hand-chosen by the Buddha, mid-level monks that were, you know, well on their way, and new monks that were just trying to find the path. But they also had wanderers who were seeking answers, you know, just coming in and, you know, sitting down and then wandering off. And then there were people that you might call opportunists, people looking for a free meal, people looking for power and prestige, or lower caste members who were looking for advancement. Turns out that the way seniority worked in the Sangha was it was determined by when you were ordained. So a lower caste member who was ordained before a high-level Brahmin, for instance, would always outrank that Brahmin in the Sangha. Now, with so many competing demands, it became difficult to manage the Sangha at times. The Buddha had assistants who were helping him, but they proved to be problematic over time. You know, sometimes during the travels, they would decide they wanted to go this way, and they would just drop the Buddha's bowl, his robe, his personal effects, and take off. Finally, the Buddha decided that he was going to have a permanent personal assistant. And a lot of the monks wanted the job, but he rejected them all. It became clear that he wanted Ananda for this role. But Ananda had the audacity to negotiate terms. For one, he didn't want to personally benefit from this job. So no fine robes or no special food. He wanted transparency here. If he missed any of the Buddha's teachings, the Buddha would have to privately recite the teaching for him again so he could continue to be the repository for those teachings. He wanted to control who met with the Buddha and when. So he effectively managed the Buddha's calendar. Well, the Buddha agreed. And this last requirement gave Ananda a real outsized power in the Sangha because even the most senior level monk had to ask permission from Ananda to have an audience with the Buddha. I would say Ananda became the Buddha's chief of staff. Not surprisingly, some of the senior level monks were pretty jealous of Ananda. And I guess at first that kind of surprised me. You know, here's these people that are fully enlightened, and yet they're jealous. But I guess reading a bit more, it was saying that some of these monks felt that they had eradicated all the poisons of hatred, greed, and delusion. And you can imagine if you believe that, then guess what? You're going to be blind to your own failings. Well, we're talking about blindness here for a second. A big blind spot of the Buddha was the lack of women in the Sangha. Admittedly, at that time in India, it was a very paternalistic society, and they had rigidly defined roles. But as I mentioned earlier, the Buddha was willing to flout societal norms and accept lower caste men. I guess the most compelling reason I could find for not including women was that the Buddha was really focused on spreading his message, and he may have been worried that mixing men and women outside of the constraints of family structures may have led to sexual distractions, which would have, you know, hindered his message, perhaps. even when his when the Buddha's foster mother, Prajapati, begged him to join the Sangha, the Buddha refused. Eventually, Ananda used some of the Buddha's own teachings to convince him. Citing some of the Four Noble Truths, he asked, "Are only men capable of suffering?" Well, of course, the answer is no. Then he asked, "Can only men renounce their attachments and attain enlightenment?" Well, again, the answer is no. So then Ananda said, "In light of those conditions, women deserve equal treatment in the Sangha." And the Buddha relented, and the first order of nuns was established. Ananda continued to serve as the Buddha's attendant for about 25 years up until the Buddha's death, around 400 BCE. They were traveling, and they decided to stop in a local grove for the night. A nearby blacksmith visited and asked him to dinner. Well, I guess the food was spoiled, and the Buddha got food poisoning. So as the Buddha's life slipped away, Ananda fell into confusion. Supposedly, the Buddha said that he could live for another 30 years if only Ananda asked. But for some reason, Ananda remained silent. And the Buddha repeated this two more times, but still there was no response from Ananda. Now, it happened that Shariputra and some of the other senior monks had passed away just before this, and that left Ananda alone as the senior level monk in the inner circle. So Ananda became the funeral director for the Buddha's multi-day ceremony. While the Buddha was lying in state, Ananda noticed that there were some women at the perimeter, and so he invited them to the front of the line to venerate the Buddha. Later, the ceremony hit a glitch when nobody could seem to light the cremation fire. The rumor went through that the gods were delaying the ceremony until Mahakashapa could arrive from his forest dwelling. Well, Mahakashapa arrived, but he was angered that Ananda had let the women near the Buddha's body before him. According to legend, the Buddha stuck his feet out of the coffin so that Mahakashapa could venerate him. But then Mahakashapa became irate when later on the Buddha stuck his hand out of the coffin and waved goodbye to Ananda. With the funeral behind them, the monks decided that a council was in order to determine how to proceed in the absence of the Buddha. One order of business was that Ananda was going to recite all the Buddha's teachings, but there was a catch. Monks decided that Ananda could only attend if he attained full enlightenment. Now, talk about a high-pressure situation. Maybe it was because of that pressure, or perhaps facing failure, he finally gave up in defeat, which maybe released the mental blocks that was keeping him back. But whatever the reason, hours before the council, Ananda attained full enlightenment. So the monks assembled for the council, and there are several accounts of how Ananda came into the council. One was that he walked in, and his face was so radiant that it was obvious to everyone what had happened. Another one was he floated through the air and ascended to his council seat. I kind of like that last one. I just like the flamboyance of it. He then recited 84,000 sutras from memory. And at least one monk passed out because it seemed like the Buddha was teaching. With that, the entire council embraced Ananda with open arms. Nah, actually, I'm kidding. They decided to put him on trial. Here are some of the charges. One of the big questions was, which of the Buddha's rules should they keep? The Buddha had said they could drop the minor ones, but Ananda failed to ask which ones were minor and which ones weren't. One monk stated that they could drop all the Buddha's annoying rules now that he was dead. But Mahakashyapa prevailed, and they ended up keeping all of them because they didn't know which ones were which. He also failed to ask the Buddha to live longer. He let women next to the Buddha's body during the ceremony. Horrors, apparently some of the women's tears fell on the Buddha and stained his feet. And finally, he convinced the Buddha to allow women in the Sangha. I guess some of the senior monks were still pretty crusty about that. In response, Ananda agreed that, yeah, he should have asked about the rules. He blamed Mara, who is a celestial being that causes confusion, for clouding his mind when asked about the Buddha's lifespan. And at the funeral, he was actually concerned about the women's safety because the line was so long that he was concerned, afraid they wouldn't return home before dark. But he gave absolutely no apologies for allowing women the sangha. Eventually, the council lost interest in the trial, and they just dropped it. They decided to move on to more pressing matters. After the council was finished, Mahakashyapa became the leader of the Sangha, and Ananda continued in his role as repository of the teachings. As Mahakashyapa reached to the end of his life, he transmitted the Dharma to Ananda, and Ananda led the Sangha for many more years. We talk about three essentials in Zen: great faith, great doubt, and great determination. So how did Ananda embody these? Great faith doesn't mean blind faith in a deity or a set of answers. It means trusting that the Buddha's teachings actually work, and a deep trust that each of us can attain enlightenment. I think this is where Ananda really struggled. The Buddha taught him to look within, but he seemed lost and just kept asking lots of questions. In the Kangan I mentioned earlier, Mahakashyapa was effectively saying, Ananda, you already know the answer to your question. Great doubt isn't the opposite of great faith. It means being willing to dig into those deep questions like, what is this? Or, who am I? Here, Ananda isn't lacking. For him, the big question may have been, how can I remember everything the Buddha said, and yet I'm still not free from suffering? He lived with this question for over 40 years. Great determination, I think, is where Ananda shines. He never gave up. Imagine you lived with the Buddha for decades, and all around you people are having these great awakenings. And then those same people are criticizing you. I think it took great determination to stay on this path under those circumstances. And I'll throw one more thing into the mix: great compassion. I think it took compassion for Ananda to say yes to being the Buddha's attendant, because it meant focusing more on the Buddha's needs and the Sangha's needs than on his own desire for enlightenment. I was going to end the talk here, but I just had to tell one last story. So, according to legend, when Ananda was nearing death, he notified a king who wanted to preserve Ananda's ashes and bones, so what we call relics, to ensure that they were treated with respect. When the day arrived, the king and his army arranged themselves on one side of the river Ganges. Unfortunately, a competing king and his army showed up on the other side of the Ganges. Ananda was afraid that the armies would battle over his relics. So what to do? Well, Ananda levitated to the middle of the stream, soared up into the air, and burst into flames, showering his relics on both sides of the river so that the kings and their armies could mourn his death. That's a great example of the middle way. May we strive to follow Ananda's example in our lives.